Give to Bowens, and he's into the end zone for the Georgia touchdown. They take advantage of the Mississippi State fumble.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We bring in Carter Freeman because it's time for the Campus Connection, and we have a huge couple of SEC games this weekend. But I want to start with something else because, you know, I love A&M.
You do.
I think Lane Kiffin is really off base right here. So Lane Kiffin is annoyed that Texas A&M is third in the CFP. And he said, Texas A&M being three, what more do you want them to do to be one? Put them on a neutral site, ask Vegas what's the spread. And that, to me, shows more than people sitting in a room and just guessing. Well, look, I love A&M. I guarantee you they would definitely be underdogs against Ohio State. And I'm thinking they might be like six-ish points underdog. I haven't checked on that, but they would definitely be underdogs to Ohio State. And I'm almost certain they would be underdog to Indiana as well. And so as much as I love A&M, I think his point is proven in the way the rankings are laid out.
Yeah, I disagree about the Indiana one.
I think they'd be favored against Indiana?
I think that would be close to a pick 'em. I think it'd be less than a field goal fit, maybe a 1-point favorite
for
whoever would be favored in that game. And I could see it going either way. But I mean, to this point, Ohio State has just looked different. But Danny Cannell on G-Bag last night was saying Ohio State hasn't played the schedule that A&M has played.
So yes.
This is politicking season with coaches where they're talking about why our conference deserves this, why we're this good, why we should have more teams in the CFP at the end of the day. You know, Greg Sankey's talking about how he wants five SEC teams in the playoff, and all of the coaches are kind of falling in line. But Ohio State would be favored. I think the Indiana A&M one's pretty close right now.
Well, and since you just mentioned that, Mark Keenum is somebody who had stepped out and said that the SEC would prefer to have no automatic bids. And my first thought was, I bet they would. My second thought is, I don't see how that would ever pass the rest of the commissioners.
Because they don't want the sixth place Big Ten team replacing their seventh or eighth place SEC team in like a theoretical 2014 playoff, right? Like we're politicking, and that's one of the reasons we still are going to continue with the 12 team playoff for the next few years at the very least, until the SEC and the Big Ten come to some common ground, which will most in my mind will be a 16 team playoff where everyone gets a home game and then you move on to the bowl games. Automatic qualifiers, I'm not sure on. That's obviously the holding point, but we're going to stick with this 12 team playoff in this very imperfect system that we currently have because they can't agree on it.
Now, we didn't get an opportunity to talk about this on Tuesday, but I want to set the stage for you, and then we're going to kick it to cut number 7. I know normally we might not like be super entrenched in the Montana and Eastern Washington game,
which we should be. Big Sky football is great football.
So Montana's up 29-24, Corey. It's 3rd and 1 from the 5-yard line. Eastern Washington doesn't have a timeout, and so they're trying to spike the ball, because if they can just spike the ball, they'll get a shot on 4th down. Here's what happened, though.
Scottle will spike it.
He fumbles
it. The ball. He lost the ball at the 10.
That's game over.
They can't stop it.
So it was then 4th down, but by the time any player moved, there was only 2 seconds left. So they lost trying to spike the football.
That is terrible.
Kirk Cousins did that in the NFL, right? Didn't he, fumble a spike and it was a cover the other way. Kirk Cousins is the guy that comes to mind for this particular kind of play.
I know it's older, but was it Herm Edwards that busted through the Giants line and caused them to fumble as they were trying to kneel it and then picked up their ball and ran it back for a touchdown?
Right.
And what just happened? Mm-hmm. And like, those are the moments that you're like, nothing should go wrong at all. This is hilarious, though.
Life finds a way.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they would have won for sure. I mean, you still had to convert on your 5-yard play to score a touchdown, but that just feels like the worst of the worst ways to lose a game. But what I wanted to talk about, if it's okay with you guys, do you think that ESPN, at least for this year, should stop doing their football power index? Because I don't know if they've actually watched any college football this year. Here are some examples. Texas A&M is undefeated and ranked behind Notre Dame, despite the fact that they went in to South Bend and beat Notre Dame. Utah is ahead of Texas Tech even though Texas Tech beat them in head-to-head competition. Penn State is ranked 21 after going 3-6 and firing their coach, and they haven't beat a Power 4 school yet. And Auburn is 24 after losing 6 of 7 games. Do you think ESPN should just pack in their football power index for the year?
In years past, I always think of FPI with Texas during their downtrend in the 2010s, and they would have 4 or 5 losses by the time November rolled around, and they would still be ranked in around the top 10. So it does not take into account how teams look on the field whatsoever. This is like what, strength of record, strength of schedule, like a bunch of analytics stuff. And this is part of the debate with the CFP, right? Is the committee takes a lot of this stuff into account with how they rank the teams, but they also take into account the eye test and how teams look on the field. And you never understand, they'll never tell us how much, you know, what they give to one versus what they give to the other, how much credence they give to one, right? So like, yeah, it's a bit silly to look at things like that, especially when there's some disparities in the actual CFP rankings between teams with similar records who have worse losses or better wins. And it just, it has always seemed like darts thrown. But I say that with the caveat of once all the games are played, it generally sorts out pretty well.
I'm with you.
And
on that.
I'm a big fan of releasing this every week because it gives us something to talk about. It's up for debate. And then we still have 2 or 3 more games for most teams to play. So we'll figure it out at some point. But it is fun to go back and forth about.
Now, Corey, what's...
I love the win-out percentage. That's my favorite one. Yeah. Because it's like, okay, hold on. Who do I need to be watching here at the end? Because A&M has a 17.3% chance to win out.
And that's because
I love now
they have
it makes
Texas
me,
favorite.
It makes
there.
Me want to watch them more.
Yeah,
because now I want to see if they were right. If you have like a 50% chance to
is
win
it
out,
17.3 now.
17.3 now.
That's stupid. So they're favored by 20 points this weekend
over South Carolina.
Yeah, and then they play
Samford.
Exactly. And so the only game really then is Texas, and I get it. They're going to be under at least
Samford
it feels this way. Yeah, they're really going to drop that one. And if they do, that would be the most A&M thing ever. But that feels low. I would have thought it was like 35%-ish.
Well, Ohio State's at 47. That look Tech is at 61. So that's the highest number I see there.
Tech's remaining schedule is UCF and West Virginia.
Yeah.
So they get some of the least good teams in the Big 12 to end their season.
It is the highest win out percentage until you get to like Bowling Green.
Hey, Eddie George.
No
man.
Shots at Bowling Green. I'm just saying, like that, they're lower down on the index, is what I was trying to say there. But like, yeah, the top four teams, Alabama, Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State, all above 35, up in the 35 to 47 range, and A&M at 17. That's something that if I'm Elko, I'm walking in and stamping that up on the wall and saying, all right, boys, nobody else. The computers don't think you can do it.
You got a 1-6 shot.
Let's go show ChatGPT what's up.
What do you think, Corey, how would you define volunteer besides being from Tennessee?
Somebody who has a desire to help and they're willing to give their time without pay in order to accomplish a task.
Now, I'm glad that you said that because the NCAA agreed to pay $303 million to volunteer coaches in a settlement.
A settlement?
Yeah. So the issue, Carter, if I understand correctly, is it wasn't necessarily just the coaches complaining. It was that you're supposed to have a limit on volunteer coaches of one per sport.
Like and you have a limit on your general coaching staff, so there'd be a limit on that too.
And so they far outused that, and they had 7,700 volunteer coaches who alleged that the organization engaged in illegal wage fixing. And so they all got a total of $303 million after legal fees and everything else. I think it's $39,000 per person.
Really?
How would you like it? I'm sure if you volunteered anything in the past, if they're like, you know what? Our bad. Here's $39,000.
I mean, Peace-a-thon's kind of a volunteer thing. That's 14 hours a year. Plus whatever else we do on the outside of that. So,
right.
$4,000 between the four of us here, including Alec. I mean, that's $1,600, or that's $16,000. Let's get that going.
Were you about to get mad at him for not doing correct math at first?
No.
I was an art major, Kevin. I always let people know that.
That's fair. I just thought that was amazing that the NCAA is so bad at everything in terms of governing.
Jeez,
that
man.
Even on the volunteer coaches, they're like, we can do it. Here's $300 million.
We have to pay you.
They're finally acting on some of this stuff, though, because did y'all see that they penalized Michigan State for having improper players play for them over the last couple of years? They took wins away from 2022 to 2024, and they're winless this year in conference play. So Jonathan Smith, Michigan State's current head coach, does not have a Big Ten win to his name right now.
So serious question about that. I know it might matter for like the coaches specifically. How much do you think that matters for the team? Because like you've stripped national championships.
Oh, it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
And Michigan fan or any Michigan player that was on that 2023 team that they saw them beat Washington on the field, like you don't take that away. Like, and I know they haven't specifically taken that title away from Michigan, but if they did, like what fan is going to care?
Yeah.
You got to see that. You got to live that.
Yeah. Like you never get back together, Corey, and celebrate. Like if for some reason the Oklahoma title got taken away and you're like, well, we can't celebrate it anymore.
Dude, I will say this, though. I'm sorry to take up your college football time. When I was about 10, 11 years old, we were mm-hmm. in Dick's Last Resort. Mm-hmm. And the couple sitting next to us was celebrating, and they bought my parents a bottle of champagne. And I was like, what the hell's happening? And they bought me a shirt and a hat, and they were like, we're celebrating our divorce. And I was like, what? Y'all got divorced? And they were like, no, we've been divorced for 15 years now. We're celebrating the day that we got divorced. And I was like, people do that?
That's
together?
Nice.
If I got divorced, I wouldn't want to see her again. I would be like, no, that's it.
Tell me about it.
Did you choose to go to Dick's Last Resort?
I was like 10, so probably not. I didn't drive there.
Carter taking shots of places.
Yeah, I have no clue. Actually,
I know how that place goes.
My friend's mom was like one of the head CEOs or something like that, so we got free stuff anyway.
From the 903, damn, I was a volunteer coach for Baylor women's basketball 2 years, and I never got anything.
Uh-huh. Call the NCAA.
Yeah.
Call them up.
Thanks a lot. Let's see if we can make this happen. Yeah, just file a class action lawsuit. They'll settle. All right.
To the Supreme Court.
I mean, who knows? So is it Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, and everything else this weekend? Or are there different games that y'all were keyed up on that you think matter either to you personally or to the hierarchy of college football?
Well, all of the ABC games and the two that you mentioned are the afternoon and the night game are
important. I'm excited about both of those games.
But then the 11 a.m. game is Notre Dame at Pitt, which is a non-conference game, but game day is going to be at Pitt for the first time in several years. Mm-hmm. And Pat Narduzzi, who's Pitt's head coach, said this week, it doesn't matter if Notre Dame beats us by 100 or not, because it's not a conference game, it doesn't matter. Mm. So there's been all these like weird comments coming from
that
Pitt's direction, which like it's fair. If Pitt loses this game but then wins out in the ACC and then wins the ACC title, they're in.
Yeah.
But if you're Pitt and because they're 7-2 right now, if you beat Notre Dame and you end the season 10-2 and you don't end up in the ACC title game for whatever reason, right? Like you'd be sitting there 10-2 with a win over Notre Dame. Like that has to have some consideration for one of the final spots. So it's a weird thing for them to say, but on the Notre Dame side, we've all talked about how they lost their first two games. This is another chance for them to keep winning. They go into the CFP on a 10-game winning streak
and
getting left out.
I would love to see that because it makes the A&M win over them look even better.
Not for Miami, only for A&M.
Sanford Stadium, Brian Kinney Stadium, and Kyle Field will be the loudest places you will ever hear this weekend.
I could see
I think those three, like those games are set up to be fantastically fun. And those stadiums are, I don't know. I'm a little concerned. I'm a little concerned for Georgia and whether or not they're going to be like, it's just Texas, or do they really want to shove it to Texas?
So here's the thing about both, let's say Georgia and Alabama to start. It's going to be significantly more difficult. I will concede that straight away. I can still see a path to them getting into the playoff if either one of them were to lose. For Oklahoma and Texas, their respective opponents, this is it. You lose this game, I would assume you're out. I'm sure wacky things could happen, but like, let's say logic prevails, they're out. These are elimination games for those two teams. Yes?
I think I agree. And both Texas and Alabama are looking for some revenge, right? Because these are Texas lost to Georgia twice last year, and OU basically ruined Alabama's season by, you know, they're giving them a third loss and having them be the first team out of last year's CFP. But for OU and Texas, yeah, OU just would not have anything left to stand on. 9-3 OU would be an improvement for them from last year, but then your best win would be Michigan, which right. is a good win, but you didn't beat Ole Miss, you wouldn't have beaten Alabama, and you lost to Texas. And on the Texas side, their best win would either be OU or Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
But if you've lost to Georgia, lost to Florida, a team who's fired their head coach, like 9-3, it's going to be tough. It would come down to, as we're talking about with Pitt, with Notre Dame, if they both end up at 10-2, would you rather have the team that won more games or the team that played in the tougher conference and lost one more, but maybe beat a team that people look at with a little higher regard? So in general, I don't think a 9-3 team should be in the playoff. I think
I
you should reward teams that win. You should reward good wins rather than bad or, you know, good losses,
yeah.
which is the whole Notre Dame fallacy, right? Because their two losses were by 4 points and we're giving them the benefit of the doubt when they haven't played anyone of that tier since then. But I would like to think that if either OU or Texas lose this weekend, they're probably out. And if Texas loses, why would I pick them to beat A&M at the end of the season?
Yeah.
Right? Like if they lose here,
that's fair point.
It's going to be even tougher for them to end at 9-3 because they have another tough game. And same thing for OU. They have LSU and then Missouri after this, and those aren't pushovers. I know LSU fired their head coach, but to me, that's still LSU.
Now, we joked the other day that FSU, since the start of last year, has fewer ACC wins than Connecticut.
It's not a joke. It's a fact.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a fact.
It's just
joking
true.
On them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I like that phrase. But Mike Norvell, in the meantime, has said that the Seminoles will win a title in the near future. What title does he think they're going to win? Like the national title? And who's going to be the coach for that team?
Look, they had the chance to beat Georgia in the Orange Bowl several years ago and be 14-0 when they could have just claimed a national championship, even though they got left out of the CFP. The only thing they're going to win now is, I don't know, maybe a Cheez-It Bowl title.
Okay.
How about a Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl title?
Oh.
You know, if you really want to claim that, like, that can be your thing. But we've seen you can kind of, you know, rebuild quickly in this day and age of football. Mike Norvell did it in 2023, but it can fall apart just as fast. So the Florida State, just ever since Jimbo left outside of that 1 year, has not been a place of sustained consistency. So whoever they bring in, if they are to get rid of Norvell, he's going to have a lot to turn around. And anytime soon, I don't know, it's 20 years soon, it could take a minute.
Thank you very much for the time. As always, when can people hear you?
Fan University this Saturday on these very airwaves, 9 to noon. We're efforting on a couple local guests. But look, we've talked about, you know, OU Alabama, Texas, Georgia. There's plenty of other things to talk about. What head coach is going to get fired this weekend? And one last fun nugget, LSU Arkansas is this weekend. First time, I believe, in SEC modern history that you have two interim head coaches going up against one another. So there you go.
I did not know that. Corey, did you know that?
I did not, but now that I do, I'm stoked.
The KNC masterpiece. I believe that.